Now, the Ian Jessup Show.
The BC government boldly campaigned on the theme of enormous wealth from LNG, a $100 billion prosperity fund, and a reduction in the province's debt. Here to take us through some of the real story of the Liberals' dismal financial record is our regular guest, Norm Farrell, of the blog Northern Insight. Norm, how are you today?
Hi, very good, Ian. Good to be back with you.
Now, the BC government was beating its chest today with the announcement that the rating company Standard & Poor's has reaffirmed BC's AAA credit rating. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm a little bit... I lack trust in the credit rating agencies, and I think the mortgage crisis in the U.S. proved the that my concern is valid. See, in the old days, the agency sold subscriptions to investors and earned their money that way. In recent years, they've switched over to a debt issuer pays model. And so the organizations that are putting paper into the commercial markets are the ones who are paying the rating agencies. And that creates a situation where the rating companies have been shown to alter their ratings in order to guarantee that the flow of cash continues from the issuers.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I, when I saw the government news release today, I immediately Googled Standard & Poor's charges, and a story came up from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission that in January of this year, which announced a series of federal security law violations by Standard & Poor's rating services involving fraudulent misconduct in its ratings of certain commercial mortgage-backed securities. Standard & Poor's agreed to pay more than $58 million to settle the charges, plus an additional $19 million to settle parallel cases announced by the New York Attorney General's Office and the Massachusetts General's Office. And it's the director of the SEC Enforcement Division says, investors rely on credit rating agencies like Standard & Poor's to play it straight when rating complex securities, but Standard & Poor's evaluated its own financial interests above investors by loosening its rating criteria to obtain business and then obscuring these changes from investors.
And it appears that they're giving higher grades than their rivals has actually resulted in more business. They've had an increase in their business that most analysts believe are tied to those better ratings that they're issuing.
Now, Norm, on your website a couple of weeks ago, you had a very interesting quote from Christy Clark from the Vancouver Sun, April 15th of 2013. She said, it said in the paper, there was Premier Christy Clark Monday dedicating herself to the goal of a debt-free British Columbia and telling reporters that debt reduction has always been a central value for me. So the question is, how much more in debt are we today than when Christy Clark first took over the top job in 2011?
Well, we have to look at two different types of debt. There's the provincial, total provincial debt, and there's also contractual commitments. And those are a form of alternative financing of hospitals, bridges, highways, prisons, data systems, power generation, etc. And that didn't used to be a factor in the reporting of provincial debt, but it's grown now so that it's $102 billion, actually almost $103 billion in 2014. Now, there's an interesting comparison here. If you look at the amount of that $103 billion, that represents $27,000 per person in British Columbia, 15 and over in age. If you look at the contractual commitments or the alternative financing that Ontario has obligated itself to, the amount per person age 15 and over is $4,700. So we're almost 600% higher in British Columbia than in Ontario related to these contractual commitments. And they truly are debt. Now, some of them, you can argue, are the obligations are replacing what would be future operating costs, but the most substantial amount of the money that's owing is for power generation. And were it not for those private power producers having put facilities in, BC Hydro would have put them in and borrowed money to do so. In addition, there's transportation, housing and infrastructure, policing, prisons are another thing that are being built with through these contractual obligations or private public-private partnerships. Health is almost $10 billion for hospitals and other health facilities. So in my view, you cannot ignore these contractual commitments when looking at debt levels. And again, if you compare British Columbia to Ontario, in the last 3 years under Christy Clark's rule, the obligations rose by 28%. In Ontario, they rose by 5%. And of course, that was over $20 billion in BC, and it was a little over $2 billion in Ontario.
You know, Norm, sorry to interrupt, Norm. I got a question from an individual a couple of weeks ago. It says, why do you always bash the government? And my response is that it is the job of the media to, quote, bash the government. Because the government has 278 communications people whose job it is to put out information from the government's perspective. And as you know, it is very difficult, even through freedom of information, to get information about government, about what the government is doing.
Absolutely.
And I think regardless of if the Liberal government was in power or the NDP government was in power or any government was in power in British Columbia, it is incumbent on people in the media, whether it's a talk show or a journalist looking for information, to hold the government to account. And one of the things that I find is that that isn't being done. And you have a quote on your website from Annabel Hernandez. She says, if we remain silent, we kill freedom, justice, and the possibility that a society armed with information may have power to change the situation that has brought us to this point.
Yeah, that's a powerful quote, I think, from somebody whose life has been threatened by the people that she has offended by those words.
Yeah, and her father, she's a Mexican journalist whose father was killed, and she wanted the police to investigate, but they wanted money for it.
Yeah.
And but I think it our role here is not to to create a dark cloud over everything the government does, because what we're trying to do is shed some light on what the government does. And I think that is in short supply by both talk shows and the media today.
Well, I would suggest readers have a look at the weekend edition of the Vancouver Sun, an article by Rob Shaw regarding the finance minister of British Columbia. And it is a puff piece beyond all puff pieces. And it just amazes me that they have no time to discuss the important issues such as the LNG arrangements that are being made in secret, where the province is being bound for years, for generations to come, to not be able to, they're restricting the future rights of future governments to collect funds from the LNG industry. We have no discussion in public. We have negotiations going on behind closed doors, and our newspapers cannot be bothered to give it serious coverage.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Ron. Hi, Ron.
Yes, hi. I'm wondering if it's not time to have a provincial version of the old Carter Commission on Taxation. I'm harking back to 2001 and 2 and when the Liberals gained power here, and without even having a business case, they reduced corporate and personal taxes by, I think it was about 25%. We've subsequently, in a sense, underfunded some substantial programs like education and health and whatever because of the lack of a rational regime for corporate and personal income tax. I wondered if your guest could comment on that.
Well, I think the amount of taxes that are being taken out of the corporate world are certainly something that we should examine, but I believe the main problem that we have in British Columbia is the lack of any kind of rent on the resources that we're providing. If you look at the value of metals, minerals, energy products, and so on that are produced in British Columbia, and the actual returns, sometimes they're negative returns, there's a situation where, again, I've talked a fair bit about Norway in the past, where Norway decided that the public needed to have a substantial return from resource rents, and so therefore they have a totally different kind of financial situation there with over $1 trillion set aside in investments. In British Columbia, instead of collecting money from the resource rents, we're actually subsidizing the production of those products.
I'm wondering if you looked at what the NDP had done prior to the Alberta election. There they had a private members bill to create an independent commission that would look at the whole issue of royalties all the way from oil through to mining in Alberta. I'm wondering if that isn't something that could be looked at for British Columbia.
Well, I think it's very important. We need to find people that are the academics and so on that are not tied into the industry, because the main voices that are being heard right now are ones that are being paid by the industry itself. You see, a former editor of the Vancouver Sun is involved with a group called Resource Works, and it's an industry-funded organization. It's very well-funded, by the way, to put out information that to try and convince British Columbians that everything's fine, that the fact that there's oil and gas development and mining and mineral production is we should rely simply on the economic activity that results from those resources as our benefit, whereas in most parts of the world, governments think that they ought to have a direct share of the value that's taken out of the ground.
You know, Ron, I think one of the problems with politics today is that every political party is afraid to say that taxes should be increased, whether it's personal taxes or whether it's corporate taxes. If it's personal taxes, they won't get the votes. If it's corporate taxes, then the corporations will go after the politicians and that particular political party, and they will support, and people will support, any political party that says taxes should be lowered. And that's the problem we have with revenue generation and resource extraction and being paid for our resources. I think it's a very serious problem. And the public are led around by this notion that somehow we'll get everything, even if we don't pay our fair share of taxes.
Well, if I get on the ferry between Vancouver and Victoria, I see evidence that the government's quite willing to extract dollars from my pocket.
Yeah.
I wish it had the same willingness to extract dollars when $5 or $6 or $7 billion worth of coal is mined from the BC grounds.
Yeah, thanks, Ron.
How much are we subsidizing these mining companies and oil and gas and oil? This is not revealed to the average taxpayer.
No, it's not, that's certainly an issue that I've tried to address. But it's it's something that needs to be discussed more thoroughly. And the mainstream media now is driven by the advertising and the interests that own the media properties themselves.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. And Norm Farrell is our guest. We'll take a break and come back. Welcome back. Norm Farrell is our guest. He is with, actually, he owns the blog Northern Insight, and he's a former accountant. Norm, what's happening with the TransLink plebiscite in Vancouver?
Well, the voting is, I think you've got to have your, if you're voting, you have to have your ballot in the mail. And what I've been looking at is, or looking for, are the 2014 financial statements of TransLink. That would certainly help us in making choices, making our choice on the vote. But it turns out that TransLink is actually withholding the release of their financial statements. Last year, the 2013, or the audit report for 2013, was signed in March of 2014. One would assume that it would have similarly been delivered in March of this year, but TransLink is not only not releasing it, they're refusing to say when it will be released. Now, they're required by law to have an annual report and an annual general meeting, and that was typically held in May, but they've not yet announced when that might be held. And they've basically, the CEO refused to answer a question by Bob Mackin last week as to when it might occur.
Now, if the plebiscite is rejected, if the no side wins, this is to raise taxes by 1%? Half a percent?
They propose to have a regional sales tax in the Lower Mainland of 0.5%.
Half a percent.
And that would raise somewhere around $250 million, apparently, per year. And they hope that will then finance almost $8 billion worth of transit improvements. Or, let's see, maintenance to existing transit facilities.
So if this is rejected, then what?
Well, the $250 million is only a small portion of what it takes to achieve the $8 billion that they're intending to go ahead with. So if it's rejected, I suspect that they'll simply come back and find another way of raising those funds. They've got a number of different taxation sources available to them. One of the large ones is the gas tax that we pay somewhere around 20 cents a liter to TransLink, and that goes into funding. But we also have a very significant parking tax, and there's property taxes on our properties that are included for TransLink, and even our BC Hydro bills. So they've got a number of sources of funding already available to them. And this effort to get a regional sales tax is, I think, a trial balloon for other regions as well, where the provincial government would like to download as much as possible onto the municipal governments. For one thing, they then don't have to report the debt. So if TransLink goes out and borrows, it's already borrowed a number of billions of dollars, but if it goes out and borrows another $8 billion, that doesn't, that's not going to make my chart of provincial debt growth, because it's held by the municipalities.
I see. So this is a trial balloon, so that we're under BC Transit. So BC Transit could do the same thing in other regions of the province in order to raise money.
Undoubtedly that will occur if the people buy into the idea of a regional sales tax for transit. It will spread. It'll spread like a vigorous cancer, I'm afraid. And it won't stay at 0.5%. Typically, these regional sales taxes in the U.S. Are running from 2 to 5%. And so I think it's they're only asking for 0.5%, even though it doesn't begin to meet their needs to fund the $8 billion capital program. But they're only asking for 0.5% because once you turn the tap on, it's much easier to increase the flow later on.
That
0.5% will grow, in my expectation, to 1.5% within 2 years.
When do they announce the results of the plebiscite?
Well, I'm not sure, but that process is another one that troubles me. And on my blog today, I gave some links to an election commissioner in the United Kingdom who determined that there was a substantial amount of fraud involved in mail ballot systems. And, you know, in a general election, we have a fairly well-developed systems of controls and scrutineers from the various parties to the election, that they're present when the ballots are cast. The ballots are then protected. They're in a physical form, and they're supervised. Their movement is supervised and so on, and well documented. In this situation, BC, Elections BC is the agency that will be collecting and counting these ballots. They don't have, as far as I understand, any method of reporting to the sides. Well, there really aren't any formal sides, at least on the no side. The Mayor's Council in BC is funding a major effort to try and promote the TransLink referendum in Vancouver, but there's nobody other than the Taxpayers Federation who's marshaling against the for the no side on the vote. So there really isn't anybody who can step forward and say, well, we're going to look after the interests of the no side voters.
Got to run, Norm. Appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.